don't even look strange.
But with a part of trench down. Yeah. You understand? A real part of trench
really
down.
The suffering of the people.
Really, it really gives it really gives one the impetus to really go out there and try something. You know?
To try something.
And I think to Bob Marley showed that trench down with respect from where it was bringing it from a ghetto where they were well known as not very nice people. He showed it as a youth from the ghetto. Come on, come show it, boy, trench down wasn't so bad. Good things can come out of it too.
Yeah. So you're very proud of Marley?
Very, very proud.
Yes, sir.
Seeing that he was a part of Trenchtown, you know.
When he leave Trenchtown, he came into Bull Bay then. Came into Bull Bay. He and Gabby introduced him to Bull Bay then. Gabby Dredd, he's not around anymore. He have a home around a place called Turner, just up on the hilltop.
And the scheme.
Then he have another one of the scheme. That way, he was really resident. And Judy Mort also come along with him and have a house topside. So you see Bob Marley, Judy Mort, and Bonnie Wailers. We all, you know, run up and down on the sand, you know, regularly. From there, you know, Jamaica, Little Dread, we live there. We congregate there first in the morning time, you know. We cook and we smoke and things like that.
My father is the strongest influence we have in music and in life, and he's the one who caused us to be on this way, on this path. He's the one who first showed us this light, and then we search for it also and then find it to be true, and we on that path also. So he's major influence, you know. So when we found it possible now that we could have some money to buy equipment, we put it back in the same place where our father's studio was and renovated it, you know, because there's a very special vibes there and a good feeling.
Bob's childhood was not unique. However, his desire to sing and perform and to offer hope through song was. The answer was to record his music. As a result, he gave up his training to become a welder and formed his first band, the Rude Boys, who then became known as the Wailers. At the age of just 16, Bob fulfilled his lifelong dream and released his first single, Judge Not. He and Bunny soon joined forces with Peter Tosh, and the Wailers was formed. Calling them the Wailers because, it is said, they were all born crying. Their first song, Simmer Down, was an instant number one in Jamaica. Early Wailers songs were based on the popular dance music style of ska. Over time, the Wailers slowed down the beat, preferring the slower, bass-heavy sound of reggae.
He's the one that opened the way for the rest. So, you know, I always think of Bob. Well, it's kind of hard to explain to one, you know. But, you know, spirit is spirit. And it's not something you can see or hold, you know. But you just feel. And then, you know, from my spiritual feelings, I can always feel him. Because right now he's here.
In 1966, Bob and the other Wailers embraced the Rastafarian faith and began to grow their locks. Their songs deeply reflected the plight of the downtrodden people of Jamaica, trying to escape from the slums of their cities. Bob's cry of Exodus was a siren anthem to all the worlds downpressed to leave the wickedness of Babylon and make the march back to the Holy Land of Ethiopia.
Cloud nine, you're a million miles.
In 1966, Jamaica witnessed the arrival of Haile Selassie. Thus, Marcus Garvey's prophecy of a black king now seemed real in the eyes of all Jamaicans. Like many of his countrymen, Bob became convinced Selassie was Jesus Christ come again. After Selassie left, the Rastafarian influence spread rapidly. Bob and the Rasta elders prophesied that Jesus would come again, but in another name. He was convinced that the powers of the West were deceived by looking for the Redeemer in the name of Jesus.
In the early 70s, I went to live in Antigua, which is a Caribbean island. If you look at a map of the Caribbean islands, it's a man bending down, and Antigua is actually where the rear end is. After a couple of years of living there, I noticed on the radio, the local radio station, which was called ZDK, that they were playing music by somebody called Bob Marley and the Wailers, which was different to all the pop music I'd enjoyed in England. Some bright spark came along with a sweatband of the colours. Red, yellow, and green. Red apparently represented the blood, yellow represented the sun, and green represented the earth. And then the words Bob Marley and the Wailers were being mentioned along with the words Rastafarian, Rastafari. And that was my real introduction that Bob Marley was something quite special.
Being a father, really, you know, and a teacher. What is a teacher through actions more than words, you know? I mean, by growing up around him as a child, and, you know, children learn very easily by what they see, and especially by what their parents do, you know? So we learn a lot from our father just by looking at him and what was going on around him.
He set a good example then.
Yeah, very good example. Believe in what you're doing, be strong in what you're doing, you know, and don't be intimidated or don't let nobody disrespect you, you know. Always keep your self-respect, yeah.
What of the musical side, though? When did you first become interested in his music? Was it when you were first born, or when did you start picking up the music?
Well, as far as I can remember, you know, I mean, from I was very, very young, music was always around us. Our father's music was always around us. So it's like it was just, like, inborn, really, you know, because from, as I said, from I was very young, it was always around, you know. So I think that it was picked up even subconsciously in our minds before we consciously realized it. Yes, this is our father music, and this is what it's doing out there, and things like that.
Living in Antigua for a few years, you start to soak up the local radio, the local artists. I had a friend called Richard Curry, who can only be described as a white Syrian Jamaican. And he owned a great record company in Jamaica called Federal Records. And I went to see him and started work with two of his artists. One was called Pluto, who we later had a hit in England with that thing there, and Ernie Smith, who was also a Rastafarian. But Bob Marley and the Wailers was never mentioned until one night Ernie Smith said to me, "You're coming with me. You're going to come and see Bob." He picked me up and we went there. I mean, it was like a hangar or a shed or a factory. It was about 2,000 people. It was hot, steaming, sultry, and the air was full of smoke. You were contact high within 10 minutes, no problem at all. But what was amazing to me was the fact I was the only white person in the whole place. And then Bob Marley came on. And for two and a half hours, he performed, flowed, did everything. And when you're in the music business, there are always what you can class as ultimate gigs, real landmark gigs. And this was one of them. It was a very, very, very special night. The next day when we were having lunch, Ernie was there and Richard Curry was there. And I said, "I saw Bob Marley last night. Fantastic." I said, "Is he available to sign?" Slowly, Richard looked up from his food and said, "He signed with that friend of yours, Blackwell."
In 1972, Chris Blackwell signed the Wailers to his Island label. The result, Catch a Fire, released in 1973, was a breakthrough album, triggering international recognition of the Wailers. For the first time, a reggae band had access to the best recording facilities. Before the Wailers signed to Island, it was considered that reggae sold only on singles and on cheap compilation albums.
I think it'll continue, honestly, forever, in a sense. I think that his music will be around forever. Mozart's still influencing people. That was 400 years ago.
Somebody at Island Records called me up and said, "Bob Marley and the Wailers are playing tonight. Do you want to come?" And I went, "Yeah, absolutely." And then I thought about it and I thought, no, I don't want to go. It's going to spoil the magic of that night. Because there are ultimate gigs, and when you're in, you know, you go to gigs and some are good, some are bad, but there are ones that are so special you never ever forget them. And I suppose in a way it's like eating your favourite box of chocolates. You've got to know when to stop. And I didn't want to go and see a different show, because that show in Jamaica that night in Kingston had been absolutely spectacular.
Was gonna be a superstar, whatever. You know, he had that in him to go forth and tell the world, you know. He educated himself to educate others.
Well, I assess him as the third world superstar of the day in the field of entertainment. He was not just a Jamaican singer, he was an international singer. Because the message that he carried was the message of third world people all over the world. In doing so, of course, he helped to put Jamaican music on the map internationally.
Well, people believe that Bob was a prophet. I know Bob as a messenger. I won't stress his head about he's a prophet. I know that he's a messenger. His understanding was God owns everybody's conscience. You see, when a person is alone, they aren't alone. And that is what people have to answer for on the day of reckoning. You know. So I don't think he would be as quarter if he didn't have that understanding.
All his aim, his desire was in music, nothing else, you know, nothing else really that he was interested in. Beside, you know, music, that was his main thing. What I really know is reggae music. He might play other music or interested in other music, but this is the one that I really know. Because, you see, that's how he put the message out to the whole world, you know. So he put out his message in song, that everybody should come together as one, live as one, and, you know, nothing better than that. How good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. That's Bob Eamon's desire, to see everybody live in peace and harmony in this world. Because that's what let the world go round, you know, love.
He's the one who teach us everything that we know, singing and playing and things like that, because as his children, we followed his footsteps, you know, as an artist. I mean, it's also an inborn conception too, because all of our family is musician. Our grandmother is a musician, you know, our uncle is musician, our auntie is musician, all of the family is musician.
One particular song that stands out in my mind is a song called Small Axe. In this song, he's saying, if you are a big tree, then I'm a small axe and I'm ready sharp to cut you down. This was, you know, with reference to taking on the system.
One thing I did like about Bob Marley, apart from the music, was his taste in women. Now, if as a Rastafarian, he treated his women as second-class citizens, I was not a party to that. But I did see him turn up in various places on various TV shows and various concerts with some of the best-looking women. Now, as a Rastafarian, he obviously believed that he was in a relationship and they should bear his children. Hence, the Marley estate, the Marley family, the many children of Bob Marley, all with different mothers. But boy, did he have some good-looking girlfriends.
I think there's some parts of the world where it's frowned upon, but if you look as every child that you bring into this world as a blessing, then he was blessed.
I think people put in a bit too much pressure on the gentleman. He love woman, man.
It's not uncommon for anyone grow up in Jamaica to have kids with different women. And of course, if you're an artist like Bob, the great Bob, of course, there's going to be more options.
I believe that in Jamaica, even this guy in the band that play the bass, they call him Fumbling Man, yeah? Because he have many children, you see? So, being Bob Marley now, and you love woman, and as a Rasta, them don't believe in conception, like probably abortion and stuff like that, you know? And from a woman get pregnant, you know, if you have baby. So you have a lot of children, you know what I mean? See, so you're trying to ask me if Bob Marley was a bedroom bully, but I don't think so. A lot of guys love it. A lot of girls love that as well, you know what I mean? But Bob Marley was an handsome man, so, you know what I mean? Enough woman would want to be with an handsome man. You know, see?
Marley was becoming revered as a mystic and prophet. His influence was noted by politicians. When Bob was approached by the then Prime Minister Michael Manley, offering to stage a free concert, he agreed. Throughout the island, civil war raged between rival political factions. And now that Bob had become an international celebrity, politicians sought to use him as a pawn in their power struggles. On the night of 25th of November 1976, assassins crept into his mansion and opened fire. Bob, along with Rita and his manager Don Taylor, were among those hit.
As a manager in the music business, the most remarkable event that happened in Bob Marley's career to me is when his manager took the bullet. We've seen all the movies about the security people around the American prison. Would you take the bullet? He apparently, if I can remember rightly, he was at home or in his manager's house and some assassin came in to shoot him, and Don Taylor, his manager, leant across him and took the bullet. Now, in Jamaica, there's always been terrible violence to do with politics and elections. I think it was at the time of one of the elections, and both parties tried to claim him as their own so that they could get his followers to vote for their party. And it was a political situation. Somebody obviously felt it was better to have him off the scene, and then he couldn't be used by other party. Well, being a manager, you think about that and think, my acts are quite nice, but I don't think I'm going to take the bullet for them.
there was a politician thing going on in Jamaica at the time, you know, trying to pull him on this side, you know, what party. But because he was on God's side, you know, they never agree with that. So they tried to frighten him.
Bob Marley was shot by a politician, you know. Yeah? To be a president in Jamaica, you have to be corrupted. Any kind of politician, you have to be corrupted. I don't think Bob Marley would want to be a president because politics is too corrupted.
Whether or not Bob Marley would have made a good politician is difficult to say. I think he might have declined to be a politician, but I think he would have made a great politician's advisor.
If he was an MP, the area would be positive, you know? Anyone would tell you if he was an MP, you know? But the politician, very dangerous, you know? Politics is life and death, you know? Very selfish.
How could a man who fight against politics become a politician? You see? Bob Marley was more like a revolutionary. Yeah? Bob Marley was like the vice for Rasta, because the things what Rasta was saying in Jamaica, Bob Marley could say it for them through the music. And the way Jamaica is, you have one television station at those days. Yeah? And most people listen to the radio. Or you buy the paper. Some people couldn't afford the paper. So a lot of people listen to the music. That's why you have reggae music more times, so we're political in that way, because people can get the message within 1 year through the music, you see? So Bob music is like a vice Rasta, because everything time you hear Bob talk about Rastafari, you know, because it was nothing else than a Rasta, you see?
Ghetto youth, tired of the constant political infighting, banded together in a mammoth reggae concert for peace. It ended with Prime Minister Michael Manley and opposition leader Edward Sayaga on stage, shaking hands in an appeal for peace. The man responsible for it all, they say, was Bob Marley. Bob, you've been labeled a powerful political individual. How do you regard that?
Yeah, we was like, we try for make really bring peace, knowing that we really can't solve a problem with a war, you know. It doesn't really solve a problem when I feel like really killing someone. But whose problem am I going to solve when I kill someone? You know what I mean? So I figured peace is the best thing. And that's why I go ahead and work with it, because it was a spiritual thing what happened.
But isn't what you need some sort of social, legislative change? The economic conditions are bad. You have a lot of people who are unemployed.
What's really going on now is that we don't really want the island to change. We want the world to change.
And his music is how he gets his message across. Rastafarianism is very popular in Jamaica, yet in Canada and the United States it has a bad reputation. People are associated with drugs and the trafficking of marijuana and violence, police arrests.
Yeah, man, them crucified Christ, remember? Christ was a Christian and them crucified Christ, same is not what
no,
it is.
No, but let's go back to the facts. People have been arrested, and the Rastafarians in Toronto, for example, have very bad reputation.
I wouldn't say that the Rastafarians have a bad reputation. I would say people give the Rastafarians bad reputation because the Rastafarians, all of these things happening before the Rastafarians even start coming to Canada anywhere around here.
But the things that are very obvious are things like the way you look, right? To most people who are very conservative in dress, you look quite strange. Plus the fact that you advocate smoking marijuana.
Yeah, you think this, I'll show you this now. Could they tell God that it's not legal?
No, but you're...
They couldn't tell God that it's
not legal. You have a very strong religious belief, but other people don't necessarily share that. And what they see are the obvious things. And isn't it, in fact, true that many Jamaican people get involved in the trafficking of marijuana and therefore get the bad reputation associated with Rastafarians?
People get trafficking. You see, I don't really know anything about those parts of life. You know, all I know about is Rastafari, and I'm trying to bring this truth to the people. What do people do with them life? I don't really know about that. I know about my own.
Okay, what is your own? What's your music to you?
My music to me, the music is more than music to me. It go further than music, you know. it go with I don't know it for the music.
But you used it as a strong message. I mean, words like a hungry man is an angry man.
Yeah, the music used me.
Whatever it is, there's no doubt Bob Marley knows how to use his music. 12,000 people, more than half of them white, came to hear him perform. And in a trance-like mystical state, he carried them with him and left them shouting for more. Despite this obvious commercial success, he appears to live the life he preaches.
I think if Bob Marley was able to look down at his career, he would be quietly satisfied in the fact that he was so much a believer in his Rastafarian religion. And his commitment to that religion stopped people laughing at him, stopped people making a joke of him, because they realized he was very happy with his religion.
He had a bigger mission. You know, his mission wasn't like... He understood that he could tell the people, you know? So his music, he did it from his heart and from his experience, you know?
He was not afraid of venturing into other spheres, you know, to achieve what, you know, what he needed to enhance his lyrics and get his word over, you know.
I think Bob Marley was inspired by the people. Herb is a thing, you know, where it's not every Rastaman smoke herb, who I know. I know some Rastaman who smoke herb, and I know enough people who are not Rasta smoke herb. I believe herb is a thing like some people who sit down have a glass of wine. And next guy would have a cigarette. So now, to me, you know, herb is like for some people, when they have some time for self and relax. Because imagine you're on stage and sing, or in the studio record, you're not going to really build up a spliff or lick a chalice pipe. You see? So when you relax now in the comfort of your home or somewhere and you want to burn a spliff, you burn a spliff. You have some people who don't even smoke, so they probably have a drink of the tea, you see? Which is more powerful than smoking a spliff, you know?
They talk about legalizing this thing because they didn't see no harm in it whatsoever. It's a drug that is used daily in Jamaica, and I would think at least 70 to 80% of all Jamaicans sometime or another have tried this drug.
His belief in marijuana was his belief, and he stuck to it. Would not take any threat from any society, any law organisation. And I think a lot of the liberalisation of the drug laws is down to Bob Marley today, especially in this country.
During his brief lifetime, Marley had risen from the ghettos of Kingston to become one of the most influential performers the world has ever seen. Through his music and words, he had almost single-handedly brought the sound of reggae and the message of Rastafari to millions around the globe. But despite his fame, he never lost touch with his own humanity or his roots, nor for his vision of a better, more just world for all people, regardless of race, creed, or color. In the end, he put his faith in the immortal words of the emperor. Until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes, the rule of international morality will remain but a fleeting illusion, to be pursued but never attained. By the late 1970s, Bob's fame had reached all corners of the globe. He became a voice for the oppressed. His records sold millions. His tours sold out, and from Asia to America, from Africa to Europe, he sang of the message of Jah, bringing the Rastafarian faith to the attention of the world.
To internationalize Jamaican music started back in the early 60s. I myself was a minister in the then government responsible for the arts and culture and attempted to internationalize it. At that time, it was a different rhythm known as the ska. We were successful only to a point. One of the reasons why it could not be successful to more than a point was that there wasn't a Bob Marley at the time who could capture public imagination and whose creative music was more than the normal types of lyrics one finds in popular music, but had a message that transcended peoples, and colors, and creeds, and dealt with the protests of a large section of the world.
He's also very significant, I think, because he's one of those rare figures that come along perhaps once in a generation who, by some chemistry of themselves, their own genius, takes what is up to then just a folk form and makes it a part of the universal art of the world.
Did you see him as a political figure in any way? I mean, he was invited to the Zimbabwe independence celebrations, which he attended, and there was an assassination attempt on him just before he was to give a concert, which some people saw as being a sign of support for you in the election before last.
Yes. The political figure, yes, political figure, no. Political figure, no, in the sense that Bob was not by temperament or mind the kind of person who would ever become, say, a part of a party. Bob wasn't at that length, at that level or on that wavelength at all. Political, yes, in that he was one of the most articulate troubadours of the ghetto, its suffering, its pressures, that I have ever heard. And the interesting thing about him is that as he grew in stature, as he became a millionaire, for example, one often wondered, will he tend to go soft, to become gimmicky, to try to appeal to a more commercial market by compromising his statement? And instead, he remained absolutely uncompromising. The range of his interest grew, said he would sing of Zimbabwe as well as Trenchtown in Jamaica. But the concern remained absolutely the same, uncompromisingly the same.
My understanding is that if Bob Marley was in a society where he may be a rich kid and stuff like that, well, he probably still do music because I think he born that way. He born with a gift enough to do music, you know, so probably he would still do his music, you see, because I know plenty rich guy who do music, you know what I mean?
Bob Marley always made money, whether he kept a hold of it or whether it was given to him. He always made money, because from day one, he was a popular artist, you know. Whether or not he himself reaped the benefits of having made money, I shall never know. I've never been privy to his private affairs, but I hope so.
Bob was a very kind, hearty person, you know, and I have a lot of friends and so on. So I didn't think money really changed Bob.
No, the money didn't change Mr. Marley. I think that it changed the people around him, you know.
I think the Rastafarian movement had a lot to do with the way Bob turned out, because he immersed himself, you know, in it and was in search of righteousness, I would say.
Being around when we used to go and visit him at the hotel, you know his temperament, you know, you get to know the person. And he was a number one, he was an ace person, you know, genuinely. It wasn't that he was the name that made him the person, you know. He was a person before the name, you know, he's a strong person.
Reggae really came out of Jamaica. It was really defined, honed, polished and promoted by Bob Marley, who never ever forgot that if it was, as long as it was reggae, it still had to be a good song.
What made him a genius was his ability to regurgitate parables and to sing a song that many people in different walks of life could identify with. You know, someone sings and you go, yeah, I know what he's talking about, you know, or I've been there, you know, or I've seen that happen.
The songs Bob sang, they were, yeah, logic and common sense.
Like, no use crying over spilt milk. These kind of proverbs, you know. He knew how to write songs that would make you wish you'd written it. You know, you hear a new Bob Marley song, you think, oh, why didn't I think of that? You know, something that was staring you in the face, as it were, you know. But it was a bit too obvious, and he would just take that, all these elements, and put them together.
Bob Marley's belief as a Rastafarian was that you didn't use Western medicine. You tried to live the life as laid down. And when he was diagnosed to having cancer, which started, I believe, in his foot, he refused all Western medical treatment. To him, the body was a temple. And if God had decided you were to leave, you had to prepare yourself to leave. The only thing that was available to him was what we would call alternative medicine. And I remember he went to a clinic where they put him on a very special diet and very special water and mixtures and herbs and what have you. But basically, it was too late. So if people come along and say there was a conspiracy, somebody wanted to kill him, it was over. He knew his time had come, and in the end, he admitted, according to the stories that I've read, that the treatment he had in this clinic helped him prepare himself for a peaceful end.
In the early hours of this morning, that's British time, the body of Bob Marley was laid to rest in a mausoleum in his birthplace, St. Anne's, in the north of Jamaica. As the man who popularized reggae music around the world, Marley was the third world's first real superstar. He was just 36 when he died of cancer 11 days ago. The hearse carrying his body was escorted by a motorcade that had driven the 60 miles north from Kingston. Thousands of Jamaicans lined the streets to watch it pass. And it was a remarkable climax to what was surely the most extraordinary funeral ever given to a pop singer. But then Bob Marley was no ordinary pop singer, as Robin Denslow reports from Jamaica.
For 2 days, Kingston almost came to a standstill as Jamaicans by the tens of thousands paid tribute to the third world's first superstar. For Jamaicans, Marley wasn't merely a great singer and writer, but more a national hero and prophet. It was taken for granted that the Prime Minister and opposition leader would attend the funeral, or that the budget debate should be delayed for a week because of a pop star's death. Sound systems, Kingston's omnipresent mobile discos, blasted out his songs as the crowds waited outside the National Arena to file past his body. Marley was brought up in Kingston's toughest slums and sang rebel music. He might not have been surprised that there was a little trouble even at his funeral.
It's been a peaceful funeral demonstration so far, but suddenly the police are tear-gassing the crowd. We don't yet know why. Tear gas exploding up behind me now.
Songs with direct, tough or compassionate lyrics with a magnificent gift for melody. Bob Marley was born in St. Anne's in the north of the island, but in his early teens he moved here to the ghettos of Trenchtown in Kingston. The wooden shack where he lived is no longer there. It's been redeveloped as part of what Marley called the concrete jungle. It was in the tenement yards around here that he first started to sing.
Bob Marley was the king of reggae, the music of his native Jamaica that made him an international superstar. He was also a disciple of the Jamaican cult of Rastafarianism, wearing his hair in the distinctive long dreadlocks and using marijuana as a sacrament. He smoked up to a pound of it a week. The biggest, biggest thing to ever did to
see you was I once a baby. Marley took his songs from the ghettos of Trenchtown to the concert halls of New York, London or Tokyo. He was forced to move out of Jamaica after an assassination attempt in December 76, just before he gave a concert that was seen as a sign of support for Michael Manley in the elections. He returned in 78 for a peace concert celebrating a short-lived truce between the Kingston gangs that was attended by Michael Manley, then Prime Minister, and opposition leader Edward Seaga, who took over after last year's election. Jamaica's present Prime Minister was once a record producer and has long been a local music enthusiast.
Many people in Britain might find it bizarre that a Prime Minister should be reading the eulogy at the funeral of a pop star and that the budget debate should actually be postponed because of the event.
The Prime Minister is reading the eulogy because, quite apart from being Prime Minister, I myself have a background in folk music and anthropology and took a very personal interest in the development of Jamaican popular music. And as for the postponement of the budget debate, or the deferment of it for 1 week, that was inevitable because the death has created a mood. And in that mood, in a small country such as ours, it isn't the right climate to put forward the presentation of the first budget of this new government.
The funeral service was a curious mixture of Rasta religious ceremony and pop concert. Inside, the hall was decorated with Jamaican and Rasta colours and pictures of nationalist hero Marcus Garvey and Haile Selassie. The hall was filled with the robed priests of the Rastafarian Ethiopian Orthodox Church. Marley's success has given the Rastas a new status. And even the Prime Minister threw in Rasta references in his eulogy.
Of his many musical creations, it may be said that special places are reserved for four. Trenchtown Rock, the symbol of his life. No Woman, No Cry, his comforting hand of compassion. One Love, his vision of peace and unity. And Rastaman Vibrations, his deep mystical faith.
At the end of the service, there were songs from the Wailers and Marley's singers, the I3s, including his wife Rita in the middle. And later, two of his sons were invited to dance on stage, just a few feet from their father's coffin. Entertainment business, Marley was the man who popularized Jamaican music around the world. For Jamaicans, he was a mixture of ghetto rebel, mystic, musician and prophet, untainted by success. Bob Marley was far more than a pop star.
You mention the word reggae and you automatically think of Bob Marley. There have obviously been artists that were bigger than Bob Marley after him, like Michael Jackson, Aerosmith, the return of the Rolling Stones, the return of other bands. But he was unique because he represented reggae. He was the pinnacle. He was the leader.
Bob Marley and John Lennon, you mean, in heaven, looking down, thinking if it was worth it. Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely, because their influence has influenced millions. You know, and it was rare before them, so it had to be something good for the people, them, you know. influence him in love, influence him in peace, how to live with one another, that you can. You know, I always say, we wasn't born through war, we was born through love. We come and see war through politics, religion, and You know what I mean?
So what do you think his basic lesson was then in his music?
Basic lesson was freedom and justice for all people, you know, especially for African people too. Freedom of Africa and justice of Africa. Yeah.
If Bob, if you choose a place to rest, I probably want to rest in Ethiopia.
There's never been another artist like Bob Marley. There's only one Bob Marley.
Bob Marley is not the godfather of reggae. Bob Marley is the king of reggae.
I don't think anything would have stopped Bob. I don't think nothing would stop Bob at all.
If Bob was here today, I would like to say the seed what you planted has flourished and you are seeing it to reap it, my son. Bless.
Mm-hmm. Bob, if you're out there listening, right, somewhere out in Zion there, I would like to say thanks for the memories and it's been great listening to your music over the years, and I've been a fan since the early 60s and I'm still a fan today.
Well, the influence which our father have on music is that him bring the people voice to the world, the voice of the people, and it influenced other artists to do the same thing and to use music in a way that not only for make money or entertain, but for educate and enlighten people. So it influenced other artists to enlighten people to through the music what them do.
I think if Bob Marley was in whatever Rastafarian heaven or Bardo that he may be in and is looking down at what's happened in the world since he left, I actually think he would be very proud of the monument of work left behind and the fact that he took a stand. He believed in his religion. He didn't care whether people made a mockery of him. He believed that you could smoke marijuana. It was a special herb. He smoked all day, every day. And I think a lot of that showed the way that people shouldn't criticize. He laid down a view. He was like the snowball at the top of the mountain. The little snowball gets dropped and it starts to roll down. It becomes bigger, bigger snowball. And I think he had, especially in this country, and probably in a lot of European countries, and even in America, his example of, I'm a dope smoker, he made it a positive situation, not a negative one. And I think today, if he was looking down, he'd have a little smile on his face, thinking, well, maybe a little of that's been down to me, but I presume he'd have a joint in the other hand.
Religion that had provided the focus for Bob's life and music incorporated the teachings of the Old Testament. But its fundamental message was of peace, love, and understanding. Bob's status as an international celebrity had increasingly attracted those seeking to exploit his popularity for their gain, and his refusal to be controlled by others had almost cost him his life. Bob had never ceased to speak out against the oppressors, using his influence to highlight the exploitation of the black race. Bob Marley was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1994 and remains today the greatest legend of reggae music. Wherever the spirit of Bob Marley resides, he is probably still jamming as his legend lives on. It is safe to say we shall not see his like again.
mountains. Jealous of the gates of Zion more than all the dwellings of Jacob. Glorious things have been spoken of the O city of God. I'll make mention to Rahab and Babylon to them that know I. With the old Philistine Tyre, with Ethiopia, it shall be said that this man was born there. And the highest himself shall establish the earth. Jah Rastafari.
Bye.